My guest at this time is Grace Marie Turner. She is the president of the Galen Institute here in Washington, and she is one of the leading healthcare policy analysts in the country. She has been with us throughout the entire debate on the president's healthcare plan, which ultimately became law, and she was even with us back in some debates previous to the Obama administration. And we want to get her thoughts now as Senate Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus announces his retirement. And he does so just a few days after declaring the president's health care law a train wreck. It's a law that he largely authored. And Grace Marie, thanks so much for being with us.
Great. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
He was certainly the author of the initial Senate version of the president's health care plan. Ultimately, there were other hands that got involved in crafting it behind closed doors, and ultimately it passed. So he's been one of the champions behind this for a number of years. And then all of a sudden, in a Senate Finance hearing featuring the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius, he declares that lack of small business certainty, people not being sure how much premiums are going to cost and so forth, that this is a train wreck. You've been predicting that all along, but what specifically is leading some of the program's most ardent defenders, at least until recently, to reach that same conclusion?
Well, remember, the Senator Baucus, as chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, did have, as you said, a huge role in getting the first version of this legislation through the Senate. And remember, that was never supposed to have been the final bill. This was supposed to have just been anything they could cobble together, literally a Christmas tree, to try to get 60 votes in the Senate, and then they'd work on it with the House version and put it together, which, of course, no longer was possible after Scott Brown was elected in Massachusetts in that special election to replace the late Senator Ted Kennedy. And so they didn't have their 60 votes, and they had to live with a Senate bill that Senator Baucus was absolutely instrumental in getting through the Senate. So he does really live with this around his neck. He was to have been up for re-election in 2014 for the first time since shoving this through. And he has $5 million in his campaign treasury, which in Montana should be plenty of money. But he clearly was saying, he said during the same hearing where he said that the law was becoming a train wreck, he said, every time I go back home, the small business owners have all these questions for me, and I can't answer them. Well, maybe like Nancy Pelosi, he should have read the bill before he passed it so they could find out what was in it and see why people are so unhappy. But I think it is really not a coincidence that the Tuesday after, the first day they're back in town, after saying last week during a hearing that this law is a train wreck about to happen, that he announces his retirement. He clearly got huge blowback when he was home last week. But he's often told the truth, whether he likes it or not. He was also the one who said about the CLASS Act. This was this long-term care act that the administration says they couldn't figure out how to implement. He said this is a Ponzi scheme of the first order that even Bernie Madoff would have been proud of. So he's often told the truth, and I think finally it's coming home. He's finally having to say, I can't face the voters having been instrumental in getting this miserable law enacted. And what this hearing was about last week was about implementation. A lot of the Senate Democrats who are facing the voters for the first time since voting for this law are very worried that the implementation is going to be a train wreck. It is monstrously complex. They don't have the resources, they don't have the people, they don't have the expertise. They virtually cannot be done right, and they're going to try to slap it together, and a lot of them are very worried that it's going to be a sloppy mess. One of the people who works for the Obama administration said their key goal is making sure this is not a third world experience.
Grace Marie, is there any admission on the part inside the administration that these things are not materializing as they expected them to, or is it all kind of message control at this point?
You know, it's really bizarre to me. We were just talking about that this morning, because the Secretary Sebelius and the White House officials in charge of this all say we're just fine, we're completely on schedule, which makes me think that the people that they've contracted to do all the work are saying it's fine, and that they just don't know. I mean, just for one example, Greg, there are at least 10 different major complex structures that have to be set up for these state exchanges to work. These are the marketplaces, allegedly, in which the new federal subsidies, $1 trillion in federal subsidies, will be delivered to people to subsidize their health insurance. One component of that is gathering information from people so that they can then run that information past half a dozen different organizations. Homeland Security, to make sure they're a citizen. The IRS, their employer. The Department of Treasury, to figure out what their subsidies are going to be eligible for. The state Medicaid and SCHIP laws. Roles. There's no system that can aggregate all that data for 20 million people that are going to be figuring out how to file a 21-page application that has a 61-page appendix. How is that even possibly going to work?
Well, Grace Marie, ultimately there's still deadlines in front of them, so it's, I guess, easy at this point, at least rhetorically, to claim that everything's fine. But how do you expect this to play out once those deadlines come and go, assuming they can't get their act together?
Well, the first deadline is October 1, where the exchanges are supposed to start enrolling applicants, and then the subsidies are supposed to start flowing on January 1, and that's when the insurance is supposed to be available. But there are a number of groups, Families USA and others, that are enrolling people now to start helping people fill out the applications this summer. But October 1 is the real date for enrollment. I think what the administration is likely to do is just anything that remotely looks like it's complying with the law to try to get people enrolled, even assumption that people are telling you the truth when they tell you what their income is, their family size, etc. Get people enrolled so the subsidies start to flow, and then deal with the complexities afterwards. The president held a meeting in the White House. Actually, the meeting was not supposed to have been with the president, but the president attended a meeting with top insurance company officials about a week and a half ago because he was upset about the cost of health insurance. Well, maybe he should look at the law's requirements for these hugely generous benefit packages, all of the other distortions that are causing the health insurance to be the cost to be higher. I mean, the insurance companies are basically the messengers. They're the middle people. It's health costs and the cost of coverage of all of these different benefits and many other factors that are reasons the costs are going up. And the president just basically went to the meeting and talked to him for an hour and said, I want costs to go down, thinking he can make a speech and make this happen. Well, it's not going to happen. So not only are people going to see this miserable mess of bureaucracy that's just not going to work, but they're also going to see sky-high premium rates. The head of Aetna, Mark Bertolini, said recently that in some markets, premium costs are going to be 100% higher than they would have been otherwise. So there are a lot of shoes left to drop on this Obamacare centipede.
A couple of questions before we let you go. One more on this topic, Grace Marie, and that is we're obviously headed towards a major deadline, as you mentioned, October 1st, and obviously so many things take effect come 2014, which is just a number of months away. So even if more and more supporters of this plan start to see things the way Max Baucus does, does that mean there is still hope for those who would like to see this repealed? Or once we start hitting all those deadlines and all these programs start beginning, that it's simply too late?
The president would just never sign a repeal bill. I don't see how he's going to do it. He considers it his legacy. And he really believes that if he just makes another speech that everything will be fixed. So, and his administration is telling him, don't worry, we're all on schedule, everything's fine. But it's these Senate Democrats who I think are really on the hot seat. The House is actually going to be considering legislation this week that would take away some money that's in a slush fund that Secretary Sebelius plans to use to advertise the law and also to hire a lot of community activists to enroll people in Obamacare, and they want to redirect it to a fund that's running out of money to help people with pre-existing conditions get actual medical care. So I think that I hope that the House has the support to get this passed, because it's yet one more way that we can, on an incremental way, defund Obamacare.
Grace Marie, real quickly, you mentioned something in passing there that was at least briefly a point of contention on some of the conservative blogs, and that is the House Republicans' support for additional funding for the plan to cover those with pre-existing conditions, which was one of the big selling points on the president's health care plan, but it ran out of money. There are those who say that the House Republicans doing this is simply entrenching the president's health care plan. You disagree with that. Explain why.
I disagree with that, because the health pool, the pre-existing condition pool was one of the major reasons that so many people supported this law. People with pre-existing conditions who can't get health insurance need help. There were better ways to do it. The Speaker of the House had a different idea. Let the states run these pools, but the Obamacare set aside $5 billion to help people with pre-existing conditions get health insurance. They have been much more expensive than anyone anticipated, and basically the administration has said, we can't take any more enrollees. We're going to stop enrollment now and only take care of the people who are enrolled. And the House said, well, you've got this other slush fund over here that's called preventive care, but it really can be used for anything by the secretary, and let's redirect that money to help people so that the people that could enroll by the end of the year can continue to get coverage. The administration instead wants to use this money to advertise all the benefits of Obamacare and to hire a lot of what I'm sure will be community organizers to help enroll people in this coverage. We think that money should be better directed to actually taking care of sick people. But it's been controversial because a lot of people say, well, this is building on a bad foundation. Anytime you're talking about Obamacare, you're starting with a mess. But this is a better way of solving this program and this problem, and importantly, it's temporary. The funding expires at the end of the year. It is not a permanent program. And then that gives us the impetus to say, how would we do it better? We do it better by helping the state set up properly functioning risk pools that fit the needs and the demands of their own constituencies, their own market, rather than one federal solution, which is basically not working for anybody. So there is a long-run solution that's better, but in the short run, we really have two choices. Allow Secretary Sebelius to send this slush fund money on advertising and community organizers, or allow the money to be spent on helping sick people with their medical bills.
Grace Marie, we'll have to make that the last word. Thank you very much for being with us, as always.
Thank you, Greg. Pleasure.
Grace Marie Turner is president of the Galen Institute. Find them at galen.org. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.